Okay, back again, episode 7 of 2S Horror Quarters Podcast. Today we have a special guest, Rick, also known as RickCreeper11 on Instagram. How you doing, sir?
Good, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Man, thanks for coming way out here, man. We've never met, and he was gracious enough to drive on out here and be a part of this, so I'm very, very grateful for that. So what's going on, man?
Nothing, just thanks for the invite. We have a lot of interest in common hobbies as well. Also, I believe we're the same age, so we grew up around the same genre of movies and TV series and just same influence and interest, I believe.
Cool, man. Yeah, Aliens is one of the first things we actually talked about, right? So
yeah, just which is really cool. A lot of people don't necessarily know the movie in depth unless they, you know, I experienced it as a kid. Yeah. So going to the theater, and I'm a firm believer that a lot of movies are meant to be seen in a cinema format. I was able to see the first movie as a kid, and the second, Aliens with the Space Marines, excuse me, actually in the theater, which was pretty cool. So
I don't know if I did. I don't know if I saw Aliens. I know I saw Alien when they re-released it. But wow, I'd love to see Aliens in the theater, because I'm sure I'd remember if I did. Did they have a re-release on that recently at all?
I think they did on certain anniversaries. It was like the 25th or 30th anniversary. Recently, I saw the original Indiana Jones at Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't catch a lot of the adult innuendos as a kid. And just seeing it on the big screen, I saw it as a kid. And again, you're a kid, you're fidgeting, you're eating candy, right, and whatnot. But as an adult, I saw it, you know, in my 30s and 40s. I'm like, well, I never caught that before. I'm like, Indiana Jones is a ladies' man. And
yeah. I was just like, yeah, he was.
It just seemed, you know, the film and actually understanding the history, the lore of like the Lost Ark and how it tied into religion and just a different perspective as an adult.
Yeah.
So, the same with a lot of horror movies as well. So,
yeah. And real quick, before I forget, Rick was kind enough to give me a couple of figures there from Aliens, and Hudson and Hicks. And that's going to be right there showcased in the case as long as this case stands. So I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, no worries. The cool thing about these figures, fortunately, when Bill passed away, it's sad. You know, I remember him from like Weird Science as Chet. with this flat top, and I obviously Aliens and other movies he did as well. And yeah. Predator, the second Predator.
Yeah.
When he passed away, Nika, who released those figures, they did a limited release at midnight when he passed away, and they announced it pretty much worldwide. So it was a limited edition. I was a huge fan of him as an actor. He also did
Terminator
as well. Yeah. He's one of the punks. That's right. Yeah. And Titanic.
Yeah.
And Apollo 13?
Yeah.
Wow, he did do a lot of movies.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. Yeah, Apollo 13. I forgot about that, but yep.
He's that character in movies that you forget he was in. You're like, that's right, he came out in this movie, and you forget who he is. But I just remember seeing his movies, you know, from when I was a kid till an adult. Mm-hmm. So when they released this, I'm like, I gotta have it. And to me, it's meant to be here because you're such a huge Aliens fan and you have all this artwork and figures and just collectibles. I'm like, yeah. They found a new home, so.
Yeah, exactly. And Bill Paxton, by the way, there's a famous picture of him in Dallas the day JFK got killed, and he was actually in the crowd on his dad's shoulders.
Really? As a kid? Wow.
Yeah. And I watched a documentary about him. I'm a huge JFK assassination case, or whatever you want to call it. I'm a student of that assassination. I've been there a couple of times already, so I've seen a lot of documentaries and pieces, and mm-hmm. I've been on the grounds and on the sixth floor.
Wow.
Depending on what you believe, who shot where and what, to Oswald's rooming board house. So anyways, I learned that Bill Paxton, he actually talked about it in the documentary.
Really? So yeah. That's insane. So there's actually a photo of him
on his dad's shoulders. He was
as JFK is driving through in the motor car.
No. If I remember correctly, it was as JFK was touring the city or wherever his stops were around Texas.
Ah, okay.
You know, on that trip.
Okay.
So it wasn't a long No, it wasn't.
When he was assassinated. Let's get that clear. Sorry.
But it was that same trip. It was that same Dallas trip.
That is insane. I never knew that. It just,
you have to look it up. It's crazy. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
I apologize if I have any of the details wrong, but he was in and around that area, and there is a picture of him during that week. So I may have had the city wrong, but it was definitely in Texas. Mm-hmm. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to cut this out anyway. So yeah. Speaking about perspective and how things change, mm-hmm. we spoke about Halloween and Halloween 2, the originals, and growing up, Halloween frightened me.
Yes.
The mask, the deadness of the mask. It frightened me, and we'll touch up on that a little more, but we were talking about Dick Warlock in part two, and how as I got older, you know, I'm 44 now, I love part two. Like, I'll, you know, it's a close, very close second to the original, but mm-hmm. when I was a kid, it wasn't that close, you know, mm-hmm. but just something about it, like the deadness of the hospital hallways or whatever it is, something has grown, man, like, in my mind about mm-hmm. it. Like, this comes in a close second. I mean, I can debate on each side of that which one would be a better one if you had to mm-hmm. say which one is better. You know, what do you think?
I think it depends. To me, I was completely terrified from the movie and just the character of the shape. It went from like completely just, oh my God, who's behind this mask to even as a kid when I was trick-or-treating, we were chased by someone who dressed as Michael Myers and me for blocks. Mm-hmm. And they got to a point, they're like, it was fun to a point. I was probably this fat little kid dressed like a ninja with my friends trying to escape. Right. We were hiding behind some hedges and he literally stopped at the hedges and did the creepy turn. This guy was in character the entire time. It went from being completely terrified of the movies to an obsession to a point I actually got a tattoo of Michael Myers.
Awesome.
And studying wow. the lore and the history and the different theories of him. I'm a traditionalist. Number one's always going to be my favorite.
Okay.
It just has the mystique of it and just it sets a standard. But two, as you said, like I got older, I got to appreciate the second one more. It just the kills were a little more in depth. And the scene when he just walks through the hospital doors with no emotion, just walks through them like nothing, doesn't affect him. And he has the doctor, the scalpel.
Yeah.
And then the scene when he kills the nurse, I think she's in the hot tub.
Oh yeah.
And he boils her in there. And from an older perspective, it just seemed like he was a little more maniacal, the pace that he walked, and just, he had more of a menacing figure. It was more of a menacing figure and just presence, I think.
Nick Castle?
Warlock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the second one. The first one's always going to be my favorite, but definitely Warlock had a different, presence.
You're saying his frame was a little too thin for you?
A little too thin, but he carried the character very well.
Okay.
And you saw the full potential that the boogeyman had.
Yeah.
Because he actually had more kills. Because if you think about it, in the first one, Michael maybe killed four people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, you know, how can you like this? I had a lady give me a hard time at work. Like, how can you like these horror movies? I'm like, okay, let's compare it to what you like. She's like, well, I'm into Star Wars. My kids enjoy it. I'm like, okay. So Michael killed maybe four people, you know, the truck driver, the auto mechanic, and then high school kids.
Sure.
I'm like, and so you like Darth Vader? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, Darth Vader committed genocide by wiping out an entire planet. I'm like, so
children.
Yes. Yeah. And she's like, I didn't think about that way. So it's like, anyway, that was a discussion I had at work. But in the second, he just took it to a different level, the way he killed people.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I don't run into a lot of people that don't really enjoy 4, 5, and 6, and you're maybe one of the first ones, because I don't either.
I don't,
you know,
for me, it ends at number 2.
Okay.
I do appreciate 3, Season of the Witch, because I like the masks, but 4 through H2O and Resurrection and the different masks and I wasn't a big fan of it. They're entertaining. I'd watch them if they're on TV, but I wouldn't necessarily. I like the masks. I like the mask from 1 and 2. I wouldn't go out and buy the other mask with the Sharpie eyebrows. And
I think that was Resurrection.
I didn't like the whole theory of there was a cult evolved.
Yeah.
And just the fact, the way Carpenter did the original movie, and if you have an opportunity to see the theatrical version, there's like a 15-minute documentary that he speaks about. The film was meant to be seen, on the big screen. He used certain type of lenses, certain type of cameras, audio. Sure. His influence to film that movie was a lot of the old Cinescope movies like Ben-Hur, Cleopatra, those old movies, the big productions, and they had a certain lighting, a certain audio.
Okay.
And a known fact people don't know, the actual jumpsuit is an olive green, just like the one behind me. But the way they filmed the movie, a certain lenses, it appears to be blue. So if you watch the theatrical version, which I've seen multiple times, but the first time I saw it, a lot of noises I didn't noticed before, a lot of different parts of the score, scenes I never seen before. And it just had a different presentation. And the way he designed, you know, Michael Myers, he leaves it up to, you know, the fan. It's like, is he just this psychopath that's super strong? Is he maniacal? Is there a sinister force driving him? What's driving him to go back home to kill these kids? So he leaves it up to you, and he's this lifeless character. And that's what's terrifying, because he's lifeless. And it's like, what's the connection he has with, you know, going back home? What's the connection he has with Dr. Loomis? Why is Dr. Loomis so obsessed with Michael? Mm-hmm. So there's this mystique, or just this mystery. You don't know what the connection is with everyone. So he leaves it up to you, which that's what I love.
Yeah. And like for part two, you know, it's well known that he kind of had to add and build on that story, the brother and sister thing, which.
What'd you think of that?
I guess I understood it. I don't think I had a huge problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to have it, I guess, but I think it would be better if they weren't siblings, I think.
It was a nice to have, but not a need to have.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the things either way. I could take it either way. And, you know, as a teenager, when I watched like 4, 5, and 6, these things didn't bother me. The masks. I rip the masks apart.
Oh, I'm super critical now.
The masks on the cover of what, 4 and 5, which I think are on those socks, if I could be wrong.
Right.
Why didn't they use that? I mean, the masks in those were terrible, you know?
What made them, and I don't know if you know, what made them stray from like the original masks and like the original molds? And
I don't know. Maybe they couldn't make those because I heard they lost it. Now, Dick Warlock said he went home with like the Elrod knife. Mm-hmm. The jumpsuit and the mask from 2. So maybe they didn't get back in contact with him. I wouldn't see why they couldn't rebuild it. You know what? Maybe it was a director thing. Maybe they wanted a whole new look on each movie, you know, because 4 is different than 5, which is different than 6, which is different than 7. Mm-hmm. 7, they have that moment where it's a CGI.
Yeah.
It looks absolutely horrible. but I heard they were having some trademark issue, so they had to change it. And then in 8, you know, what'd you think of Busta Rhymes and Resurrection and all that?
They could have done without his. To me, it was Busta Rhymes playing Busta Rhymes.
Sure.
And in how they started fighting and the kung fu references. Yeah. I'm like, I felt like they had to take some type of like pop character and just put him into this movie, and it wasn't necessary. It just,
here's the deal, like, and I've said this before. Resurrection, that's a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, I watched the hell out of it. Not because I think it's like the greatest thing, but the idea to me on its face, to me, is an awesome idea to have, you know, to go into the house online. But what they did with that, you know, is kind of silly, you know. But I watch it, I own it. H2O is, I didn't like the score on it, you know, the Halloween theme. But I've watched it, you know, and he seemed kind of, you can see his eyes. You mentioned that, right? Was it 7? You can see his eyeballs.
You can see his eyes. And you disconnect to the character when you make him, when he was human. I'm like, oh, I can see your eyes. So it's not that menacing. It's like, for example, I saw this meme the other day on social media, and they had 4 horror characters. And it was Michael, obviously. It was Chucky, the Ghostface killer from Scream, and Jason. And it's like, what would you do if you're locked in a room with one of these characters or out in the woods? And correct me if I'm wrong, the Ghostface killer was just like a high school kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'd probably slap the hell out of that high school kid, take the knife away from him. Chucky, I'd try to throw him off a building or something. And it's like Michael, I'd probably run the opposite way. I would run from him. It's just, I wouldn't know how to deal with them.
Right.
Jason, he's a big guy, and there's this maniacal evil entity or force that's driving him, and just, he's nonstop. But, I don't know, just when you make something more human or just relatable, then it kind of defeats a purpose. It takes away from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in the first 2 movies, it's just Michael's humanoid. You don't know if he's actually human or not. And that's what, like, you can't connect to what's driving him. You don't see his eyes.
Right.
He's just motionless. He breathes, and he's just like this force that's nonstop. What's driving him to do what he wants to do.
Yeah. And you know, the silence. When he doesn't speak. By the way, Rob Zombie was going to originally have Michael say boo in reference to his sister.
Okay.
I'm glad he didn't.
Right.
You know, I had a timeline issue I thought about, might have been earlier this year. Okay, so in the original Halloween, when the girls roll up to the hardware store and the alarm's going off.
Yes.
That, we're to assume that they just rolled up, the cops rolled up because the alarm's going off. Now, he already had the mask when Lori was in school in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious when he got that, and did the alarm at that hardware store go off all day, and was the hardware store not open during the day? You know what I'm saying?
I never thought about that.
Just because, and hey, I know it's a movie, but these are things, because I love the movie so much, I've seen it a million times, that mm-hmm. you just kind of hit you one day, like, okay, because when they ran into her dad, Annie's dad, at the hardware store, that was after school, right?
Yes.
That was, yeah, so when Lori was in school, Michael's across the street, and he's got the mask. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder, because her dad does say he stole some Halloween mask and some rope or whatever he said. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious. No big deal, but mm-hmm. you never thought about it?
I never thought about it until you put it in this perspective. Maybe it got lost in editing.
Mm-hmm.
But unless that store was closed because it got broken into, and the alarm, who knows what kind of alarms they had in the 70s. It was just like a bell that rang all day, or it dispatched the cops. I never thought about it until you broke it down. Wow.
Not a huge deal. I love that movie, man. It's part of me, but it's just, you know, I edit a lot of stuff.
Maybe because you've seen it so many times that you notice those things.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly never thought about it till right now. Wow. And maybe it got lost in editing. Who knows?
Yeah. And it's all perspective too. Like, and when Lori's upstairs in her room looking down into the laundry, the same shot of her looking down is also the same cut where you don't see him. So it's just an interesting editing way they went about it. And I don't know what it means.
Maybe it was a figment of her imagination. She seen him earlier.
Yep.
To me, that's one of the creepiest scenes.
Yep.
Just him looking up and just lifeless. And that, I love the score to the movie. I honestly, I probably listen to it year round, especially around Halloween.
Right.
Maybe it's a figment of matter, or excuse me, her imagination.
Yeah.
She's overactive imagination. Maybe it got lost in editing. I know it was a very low budget,
mm-hmm.
that they actually were taking leaves, recycling leaves,
right.
and putting them on different parts of lawns, and or like actually dropping leaves above the camera to make it seem like it was fall.
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome filmmaking stuff.
Who knows? Maybe it got lost in editing. But it's an amazing movie for the cost and just the budget they had. And it's very low end. And it was the highest grossing B-horror movie, because they considered it a B-horror movie to this day, I believe.
Yeah, probably.
I might be wrong, but even the locations, you go there and it's just the house in South Pasadena, it's been relocated once. And you pull up to the house, you're like, that's it? And it looks mm-hmm. tiny.
Yeah.
It looks like a gingerbread house. Now, I've gone at night. And at nighttime, I pulled up and I'm like, holy shit. It's just creepy as right. hell. And it's just different, definitely different vibe. That whole neighborhood is just kind of eerie at night.
Mm-hmm.
I walked around and every 5 minutes, I was...
Yeah, exactly, you know,
expecting Michael behind me. And I think it maybe had to do with budget and just the way they edit it. And it is kind of raw and gritty
and
at times.
Yeah.
And I love about it.
Man, the house, it sold for $1, right? Remember they were going to,
yeah.
So they picked it up, moved it. And then, you know, they refurbished it and everything. Now the Elrod house, which I just went to last October, and that's right up the street from the Sugar Mint Gallery.
Yeah.
But that's like down an alleyway. So you can kind of look over the fence and see, mm-hmm. you know, where Michael walks in and grabs the knife from Mrs. Elrod there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that was right on the same street as where the house sits now. Mm-hmm. So the hedge, the cigarette smoke on that scene where they go, where Annie runs and looks behind the hedge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed it, but that's Carpenter smoking. So this big puff of smoke.
He was smoking on set.
He mentions it on the commentary. He goes, that's just the director smoking there. But yeah, you can see it on the cut on the hedge. The hedge is, I've been there, man, a few times. I didn't get to talk to that guy who lives there, but I heard he's very nice, you know.
They seem pretty understanding. The homeowners are going to have, and it's weird because I took a picture of myself just popping out, and I have it on my Instagram. And then I've actually dressed up and took some photos at the house, just, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhat of a cosplay. But it seems like the entire neighborhood is pretty understanding that, hey, we have this iconic location, that this huge movie that was filmed in our sleepy little town. People are going to come year round, but more so, you know,
yeah.
during the season. I know there's the other location. There's the corner where people reenact Lori sitting there with the pumpkin.
Yes.
those homeowners actually put a few pumpkins out and a little history of the movie. And they're like, hey, help yourself. You guys could take pictures. There's no issue.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, I love it.
I was there once in 2011 sitting on it taking pictures, and they came home from the store. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, right? So they come right over to me, and they're smiling. And I'm like, they're like, yeah, have a seat. And I took a picture with them. Mm-hmm. They were so nice. And then I ran into them at age 40. They were just walking around, and I go, I was all geeked out, you know. I'm like, hey, do you guys remember me from 2011, you know? And they're like, no, there's thousands of people.
We get thousands of you geeks.
Yeah. I go, well, can I get another picture with you? You know, I just love that, you know. And then the other locations in Hollywood, right just north of Sunset. I've been there a few times. The ending scene, the two houses across from each other. And those were actually featured in last season's American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last one that had to do with like Trump and all that. They lived across the street from each other. So
that was, I forget that series, what season that
I didn't
was.
Watch the whole series. I probably watched about six of them, but they lived in those two houses across the street from each other. So it's renovated a lot. The one that was across the street, not the house where Lori was babysitting, that still pretty much looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
But the house across the street, it still stands, but it's just renovated. So it looks totally different.
So what's cool about American Horror Story, and it was that season, I think it was called Cult.
Okay.
In the series, the couple owns a restaurant.
Okay.
That restaurant, they filmed in Old Town Orange at the Circle. And it's actually a Blaze Pizza. So if you go there now, I had lunch there a couple weeks ago with a friend. It's Blaze Pizza, but they converted it to more of like a gourmet restaurant. I didn't know that until recently. I'm like, oh, wow, they filmed that season. So when the people are protesting, it's at the Old Town Orange right there at the Circle.
Oh, yeah. I've been there because they filmed action figure movie there. Whatever it was. It was like an action figure slash, you know, involved with humans. It was like toys coming to life. I can't think of it. But they filmed like a bike scene in that Circle. Because my sister went to Chapman, which she took me to where they filmed, which is on her campus. The ending of Crimson Tide, which is the courthouse where Denzel and Gene Hackman come out.
They filmed it there? Really?
Just that white building.
Okay.
So I went there, and they also filmed De Niro. I didn't watch it. That Rocky and Bullwinkle.
That was horrible.
I didn't see it, but they filmed that. I know you're a huge De Niro
fan, but yeah. That movie was...
I'll pass on that one. But that was also filmed at Chapman, so that's pretty cool, you know?
You'd be amazed how many, like, locations, a lot of houses, like... I know majority of Donnie Darko was filmed in Long Beach.
Okay.
I don't think it's the Arrow Theater. I forget the name of the theater in Long Beach. A lot of the houses were there.
Yeah. So me and Scaredy Cat, we're talking about Sinister Point. And they actually left a comment on my IG the other day.
I noticed that.
Saying they'll be back or something. So I've never been there, but I'm starting to learn a lot more about these haunts and these extreme haunts and things. So what are your dealings with it?
I worked for Sinister Point. Last haunt season, and they had open auditions, and I've always been a fan.
Okay.
And you know, I was always chicken. I applied for a few other places, and they obviously didn't contact me back because I didn't have experience. They went bigger this year, Sinister Point, location wise in their mazes. So they had open auditions. I applied, came close to chickening out. Had no idea what to do. It just, this creepy character just came out of me, this persona and voice and presence and things I was saying to people.
When you say chickening out, would you mean just you don't know how you're going to react?
I was standing, and I told Scary Cat this. I was standing outside the auditions. It was at the Laguna Hills Mall, and I was like, I don't know if I should do this. What am I thinking? Who am I? I'm nobody. I was about to walk out, and one of the talent managers caught me, and he's like, hey, what are you doing here? And I told the story before, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. We're just talking. And he's like, you're here to audition. And it was Danny. Danny's like, we're friends now. And he's like, come on, just audition. And they made me audition in front of a panel of like eight people. And
wow,
I didn't realize it was like the owners and the operators and like the wardrobe people. And
no costume. Just
no, just, hey, there's some props here. And so I grabbed a pickaxe and just started interacting with people. And then from there, they had us interact amongst the other people auditioning, like as a group and individual. And then like, okay, now walk across this threshold in character from beginning to end. So I did that and okay, now you're going to improv, like, you know, whams, if I tell you this, how are you going to react? Cause you know, you do have to improv as the actor.
Okay.
And, it was fun. And I auditioned and they called me maybe about a month later, like, hey, you got the position. And the character I played was, a demon-possessed security guard.
That's great.
And the maze was called Evil on Two. And what it was a hotel where some of the employees were practicing black arts.
Okay.
And whatever demon they summoned, they couldn't cast away, so it took over the hotel. And it was creepy because they were playing like old big band music, Glenn Miller music, the entire time. And it was an old-fashioned hotel. It reminded me of like, I forget the name of the hotel from The Shining.
Okay.
It was kind of like that. And it just, you heard like this big band Glenn Miller music playing in the background, but there was like these demonic drums playing the entire time and people screaming. And there was props of bodies. I played a security guard of the hotel, and I was semi-possessed and had prosthetic makeup and everything. And you actually see pictures on my Instagram. And I played it two ways, like, hey, hurry up, we got to get out. And I'm like the good guy. And the second way I played, I'm like, hurry up and get out. Yeah. You know, just
right.
And it was funny. And I just incorporated this backstory. Like, he was like this reject from the police academy, was disgruntled. So he got this job. And he was kind of a pervert that was into voyeurism because I had a security console with cameras. So I was constantly watching everybody. Okay. And I had to cover three areas. So my character was very interactive and immersive. And so I was like, oh, you go this way. You guys could trust me. And when I turned the character, I'd go into full possession and I'd run and chase people out. It was fun. It was just, it was funny because I'm a big scaredy cat. I'm a chicken. I scare easy. But then sometimes when I go to other haunts, the actors don't scare me. So just walking through my own haunt, like with my water bottle and my snacks, I'm like, hey, I'm coming through. Don't scare me. And like the actors would, you know, they jump on, scare the shit out of me. Not having an experience to go into like, hey, I don't know what to do. And by the second or third week, I just had a rhythm down and it was the funnest experience.
So the prosthetic that they put on you, I mean, do you have to show up to work a couple hours before or how does that work?
So they prefer to people to show up, you know, around 3:30 or 4. And,
okay.
So I would get off at 4 o'clock at my normal job and it was like a 15, 20 minute drive. Princess. I'd get there and get into character. You know, you put on your, you know, your costume, you get your makeup done and so everyone had ways of getting settled in. Some people, you know, would interact and hang out with each other and listen to music. I'd go nap sometimes. Some sleeping, you know, I look like a zombie sleeping and I got full makeup on and, or just go stretch or listen to music. But yeah, you'd have to get there for us. Because it was airbrushing or light prosthetics, and some people had full makeup. I say at least an hour and a half in advance. I would get there between like four and five, and we went full board at 7 o'clock for the opening night every night for the haunt. But it was fun, and I'm gonna do it as long as I can. And
yeah,
it was good and bad, but it was just being a person that's into horror movies and Halloween and cosplaying or acting as this character you're right. Portray because they give you a template. It's like, okay, Mike, we're gonna give you this template. You're the maitre d' of the hotel. Now you can morph this into your own rendition of who you want to be. It's like, am I going to be knowledgeable of the hotel? Am I going to create a backstory? I developed this character over time and I played it two different ways, you know, like I said, possessed and like I'm trying to help everyone
in the same day. Like you'd play, you just flip flop, like bipolar kind of thing.
Yeah. Just so like, for example, like there was cues, like if you heard people screaming,
yeah,
you know, sorry, you'd hear people screaming coming down the maze. Like, oh my God, and they're freaking out. So I'm standing there like this, you know, waiting for them to come. I'm like, this is going to be an easy scare.
Mm-hmm.
I incorporated, I was throwing up. So what I did, I got water bottles, sport bottles, and filled them with food coloring.
Okay.
And I was projectiling vomit like on the walls and the floors. And I'm like, oh, I don't feel so good. Or I do it through my hands. So I would see these people. Like I'd peek around the corner and you see these people terrified. And I'm like, okay, so she's freaked out. But if I get her, she's the easy scare. But the rest of the group, they're going to expect that. So I'm going to get the third person. Because the third person might be on edge too. But, you know, well, she's freaked out. So they'll probably go for her first. So it was just like,
yeah.
You heard the cues coming down the hallways, people screaming, just oh my god, oh my god, and they came to my area, and I had a long hallway, and a little security office, and then like a security console monitors. There was just white noise,
right?
And the room was completely pitch black besides this white noise, and it was like, shh. Then you got that Glenn Miller music playing and these drums, so I was just standing there. And they, you know, they go from like being instantly scared from the actor previous to me, they get to my ear and it's like kind of mellows down. They're like, is this guy to help here to help us? Is he going to secure us? So I would play, what are you guys doing here? Do you need help?
Yeah.
You know, come this way. And I'm like, you got to arrest me on the security guard. And I got to snap out of it. Nice. And so they're like, whoa. And then they see the prosthetics where I'm like torn up and I'm bloody. And then I played it like, I don't feel so good. And I'm like fighting the possession. I'm like, get out while you can. But it just, it was hard not to break character sometimes because I knew I was building up the story.
Okay. Now, when you auditioned, did you audition for the security guard? Did they give you that?
They gave me the role probably based on my stature. Okay. And they said you have a very, you know, predominant voice because I was screaming at people.
Yeah.
And a lot of the veterans were like, hey, you know, that's great. You're yelling and screaming, but you kind of preserve your voice. And I went raw a couple of nights. So I was drinking like honey tea and cough drops all night. And originally I was supposed to, the demon that possessed the hotel in Evil 2, I was supposed to play the demon. And it was a really cool mask from Immortal Masks. And I think he wore like a black cloak. I forget. It was a really long maze. Like it was just like you're physically going through like a hotel and there's like rooms and there's like a day spa. There was a security console, bathrooms. And then you got to the spirit room where the demon got summoned. And it looked like, you know, someone was doing a seance. So originally they're like, hey, you're going to play the demon. Well, cool. Okay. Really cool mask. And then they came back. They're like, well, you're going to play it's the security guard. I'm like, you want me to work security? And I'm like, no, like, no, you're going to be a demon possessed security guard. So they gave you this template and you just developed it from there.
Right.
So, it's like, hey, you figure out your rhythm, just like in work, you figure out your rhythm and it works for you. So you kind of master it. And it was fun. They had me work the crowd, excuse me, originally. So there was a, you know, a general admission and VIP line, but it was, in the Laguna Hills Mall. This is where they built the haunt.
Okay.
And on the main floor, it was like the little mini scare zones. And we had a phobia maze. A phobia maze was, it was semi kind of like, immersive, like there was light touching and you would have right. to crawl through like tight areas. I'm claustrophobic.
Yeah. yeah, dude. But that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah, yeah.
We had it was like a furnace. It looked like a boiler room. So what it is just they used the actual facade of like the maintenance area of the mall and they turned it into a boiler room. They had a character there and you had to crawl through this little 2x2. It was only like maybe like 10 feet. I couldn't do it. So I'm like, and this is like the walkthrough as employees, as actors.
Right.
I was like, I need everyone to go first, then I could do it. And I kind of did like a Superman dive and like tumbled out. The second one was like, okay, there's another crawl space that's completely blacked out, or we could stick you in a full size locker. I was like, well, I can't do either one, so I'm just gonna go out the exit. So they let me. And it was interactive, like you'd have to stick your hand like in a garbage disposal. And it was just water in there that shot up, and there was a toilet that shot water. It was really immersive. And then our maze was was a hotel. And what did it was they utilized the freight elevator of the old mall as the elevator to go to the hotel.
Okay.
So we had like a, he was like a maitre d', like the manager, and he was running late one night. And they're like, hey, Rick, do you want to do crowd control? I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? They're like, just interact with the people on their line. I'm like, well, I'm like the creepy security guard up in the security room. They're like, just, you know, interact with them. And I made it very, very campy, kind of cheesy. So, this is where I met Scaredy Cat. Actually, he was
Scaredy Cat.
He had the cheesiest smile. Like he was having fun, and I saw that. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna zone on him. I channeled like, who can I channel like to like? Because I have to actually interact with people. And I remember in all the Freddy Krueger movies, he got very campy. Mm-hmm. And had one liners, and he did a lot of and just kind of weird and pervy. So I kind of channeled Freddy Krueger, and I was interacting with people and like calling people baldy or like, hey, Slim. And as a big heavy set guy, nothing gets heavy set people. I'm not the skinniest guy in the world.
Right.
And so, I was escorting people into the elevator of the hotel, and you go into this back area and it was completely dark and they had some lights. Like you have your just up casting up and it was just red and dark. And then you hear that loop of that music again, the Glenn Miller. And I'm like, you know, my backstory, my creepy voice, that the elevator hasn't worked in, you know, 2 years. The maintenance guy was working on it, but I don't know. He looked hungover.
Right.
And so I'd ring the door, you know, I'd ring the bell to call it. And like the bellhop, his name was like whatever we called him. It was Robert. He was an actor. His name was Jimmy. Let's just say Jimmy. And like the door would open and I'll do like, yeah, get in. And like we had a photo op. And what I did, which stuck out of my head, the people that were terrified, I'd focus on them when they got in the elevator, and I kind of pointed and laughed at them the way Pennywise did in the original. It was a made for TV movie, the original It.
Okay.
So from a distance, these people are watching me. I remember it was a couple and the boyfriend's holding the girlfriend. They're looking at me And I'm just pointing at him, going, "Hey, good luck." And then the doors are closing the entire time. And I'm out of breath. I'm exhausted. And I waited till the elevator closed. And I'm like, I forget how old I am. Oh, Jesus. And I have to do this again.
Right.
It was that was fun just interacting with the people. And I try to make it personal for every single person. Like, you know, give them the best experience they have. Yeah. Make it memorable. And that's when I saw Scaredy Cat. And he was in line smiling. And I see this little dude smiling. And I'm like, "What are you smiling at, pretty boy?" And so I escort him in with everyone else. And I'm, you know, working the crowd. And I keep looking at him. I'm like, "I know this dude." And I'm telling myself in my head. And then in my character's voice, I'm like, "Hey, wait a minute. I know you." And I started approaching him. And he kind of backed against the wall. And I forget what I said. So the whole crowd's like, "What's going on here?" So I made it very personal with him and creeped him out. You're not allowed to touch. But I was doing some light touching, like their elbow or whatever. Yeah. And I escorted him in the elevator. And just to me, it was just really, really fun having that personal one-on-one experience with people.
Well, that's scary. Like, to come up, you're going to come up to me and say, "You know me now, right?" Like, and you're in character.
I'm in character. And I told him, "You better acknowledge me in your next video," which he did.
Awesome.
And he's, "Hey, shout out to the security guard." And we became friends on social media. And I did a video with him on his channel recently. Really cool dude. We talk personally, you know, about haunt stuff, Halloween, horror movies, or just like, "Hey, how's this? How's that? You need anything? Let me know." Mm-hmm. Really cool dude.
What year was this at? Because, I mean, you said it was where, at the Laguna Mall?
It was at the Laguna Hills Mall in Laguna Hills. This was 2018, last season.
Is it every year at the same mall?
The plans was to have it the same location, and it was a huge location. And it never felt full, even though it was, because it's such a huge layout.
Right.
So the first floor was the scare zones, vendors, the phobia maze.
Okay.
And then the second floor was like photo ops. We had a little escape room. Then the Evil on Two maze, which I loved. I thought it was my personal favorite. The third floor, we had a dark ride. It was called the Boogeyman Express. And it was like an old mining town. And we went on a dark ride into like these catacombs. And it was really, really cool. I never got to see it like in full force. Like when we did the walkthrough, I saw tons of pictures. I never had a chance to go up there and actually experience it. But I loved just the production they put on at Sister Point. The coolest people to work with.
Is that right?
Made a lot of friends. It's funny. It's like you figure people that are into like horror or like just the escape rooms and whatever. You figure like, "Oh, these people are weird." No, we're not. It's actually some of the friendliest people in the world.
That's what Scaredy Cat was saying. You know, and that's interesting. And I think that probably has a lot to do with you know, if you're this nice person and you're friendly and pleasurable, horror is just a good escape to still be cool, but you can be something else. You know what I mean? You can be meaner, but in a fun way.
It's just a creative outlet. Like, just because I like these slasher movies doesn't mean I'm this monster, you know?
Right.
You know, you have personal interests as well. You know, you're a very well-demeanor man as well, but it's like, it just was like family. Like, it was actually tear-jerking, like, the last day was Halloween, and like, the last week, everybody was like, we were tired. You know, you get just like anything. You get tired, you get frustrated, you get hurt. I actually got a little sad. Halloween was the last night. Mm-hmm. I went through and like I hugged the walls in like area. I was like, "Oh, goodbye, security. I'll miss you." Right. It was, and I took pictures and like I was like, "Hey, I lived here for a month and a half." I was like, "I worked with you for the last month and a half. We hung out outside of work. I saw you every day for the last 4 days in a row for the last 2 months." And some people broke down crying. It's like, and so, you know, you connect with people on a personal level, but you develop definitely like a haunt family. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a lot of these people still, and I've hung out with them as well. Everyone's looking, I know it's only May, but everybody's like, "Oh my God, the season's right around the corner." You got Midsummer Scream, and then you have a Monster Palooza just passed recently.
Right.
There's Scare LA, and there's a lot of these other little conventions popping up. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, a lot of the bigger parks like Knott's and like Dark Harbor and the Los Angeles Haunted Hayride, they start doing auditions, I say, within the next month or so. Sets already built. They've been designed. Costumes have been laid out like since the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how it's almost a business year round, like 9-10 months out of the year, as far as, designing and concepts. The Los Angeles Haunted Hayride, it's in the old Griffith Park Zoo, abandoned. And it's picture like the independent carnival that comes into town once a year. And it's just nothing but fog and orange lights.
Man.
And it's really cool because they have like a carousel that the horses are actually skeletons. and they have a few little scare zones. Like they have their Hall of Shadows, which they claim they are the only official blackout maze. So when you go in, and every theme, every year they have a different theme. It was clowns, or they took they actually had sponsorship from the movie Ouija.
Oh, is that right?
And which was cool, and they had these really creepy like demons in there. But the clowns was the ones I remember the most.
Right.
So all it is, it's strobe lights. And this year, I have a picture of it somewhere. They actually gave you like a vacuum mold mask, like the quarter mask to mm-hmm. wear as a clown as you go in. So as a guest, you're wearing a mask, and then there's scare actors who are clowns. And so all it is you had a buddy. We were in there for 2 minutes. He's like, I can't do this. I'm like, oh, I think the exit's this way. And I purposely kept
kind of nudging him along. Right?
Him all, go this way. And I had an idea where to go, but I wanted him to experience the full thing. But it was a continuous loop of just circus music with occasional, and that scared the hell out of me. And you see this clown standing there, and I'm like, hey, which way is it? And he goes, and he's all that way. And I'm like, and they totally, you know, distract him to go the wrong way. Another cool maze they have. It's they started it. I've been going to their attraction since 2013, and they actually had their 10-year anniversary last year.
Okay.
And again, it's not on the quality of people expect. Well, I expect Knott's or Universal. It's not, but it has its own mystique. And that's what I love about
right.
it. And this is just the mazes. We haven't even discussed the actual hayride. The other continuous maze they have is called Trick or Treat. So you actually go trick or treating in a neighborhood. So you actually get candy. So really? It's like you're either going to get candy or you're going to get scared. And the first year they did it was just like six or seven doors, like someone's porch. And the one I remember the most. So you come to the house. There's no decorations. You know, the other houses, there's a lady that's hosting like an adult Halloween party.
Okay.
And she pours vodka on your hands, but it's water. Another guy was like a monster. He makes you stick your hand like in a bucket that looks like, you know, bugs or whatever. And they gave you candy, which was cool. And the one door, it was just like, it's that one neighbor that you had that didn't do anything for Halloween, no pumpkins. Right. He turns his lights off like at night. So this actor came out and he's like in his, you know, his tidy whities in a robe. And he's like, what do you kids want? And I couldn't stop laughing because he looked like Ted Nugent.
Okay.
And I'm like, we want candy, Ted Nugent. And he tried not to break character. He's like, get off my lawn. And I could see he was smiling, but it was cool because they actually gave you candy. Well, that went from just like a couple doors to they built a neighborhood. And it's like a house, and the one house was like under like, it was like, they had like people like in hazmat suits and they were spraying like contaminant, like contain whatever virus it was. And they had it tarped. Yeah. One was like a church and that was creepy. And they use a lot of black lights and there's pumpkins everywhere. There's jack-o'-lanterns. I'm obsessed with jack-o'-lanterns. And it went from just being like these little vignettes of like six or seven doors to they actually framed out a neighborhood. From there, the main attraction's the actual hay rides. There's tractor trailers hauling like these toy haulers full of hay. And what it is, they take you throughout the old abandoned zoo, and they actually use facades that are built in the zoo or the actual environment. So there's like, it's a little more theatrical than like jump scares.
Okay.
So you'll come across like a penitentiary that the inmates have taken over, or there's like a biker bar full of clowns, or one year they did kind of like a purge theme and like, all these kids were trick-or-treating their neighbor and they're being chased down by killers, or like there's hillbillies, or there's like I hate to use the word, but it was like a satanic church, like a cult, like worshiping this demon who was like, you know, 10 feet tall. I love it. And it's just, it feels like you're getting away from everything because you drive up to like the hills of Griffith, you know, the observatory, and you park and you just see these orange lights with this fog rolling. You hear like carnival music. So it's like, whoa, what is this? So it's not very traditional. We don't see a lot of hayrides in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Back east you do.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it as well. It's pretty cool.
Dig it. What's the hayride part itself?
That's when you actually get into like a toy hauler or like a trailer.
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. No worries. Yeah. And you're like 30 deep with people. So it's immersive. It's more of a theatrical performance. Like you'll have, like I said, actors who like jump out. The one thing I remember, they had like a Macy's Day parade, but it was all like the actual serial killers. Like there was like John Wayne Gacy.
Wow.
And like Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. And who's the dude that ate people?
Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer. And it was like the Macy's Day Parade, but John Wayne Gacy's like the MC. And then you pull in, another thing I remember, you pulled into like, it was this huge circus tent, and I don't like clowns either. clowns and like little girls, like the scare actresses, like they're wearing baby doll dresses or weeping brides. I don't like that. Like that, this right here, I don't like. It's staring at me. That's just creepy as hell.
Yeah.
I don't mind Michael. I just don't like, you know, the nun. That's creepy. So the hay ride, the actual trailer goes into like the circus tent, and they had a few clowns. They draped like a tarp over the whole trailer, mm-hmm. and they turned the lights out. So people were screaming. So you're in this dark, under this dark tarp, and then the lights go completely out.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, the actors pop up under the tarp and the flashlights, and they're creeping everybody out. That was pretty memorable. Last year, what they did for their 10-year anniversary, they brought back all the more memorable setups they had. Like they had like this church that was on fire. It was like a monastery, and they had burn victims. They brought back the clowns in the tent.
Okay.
I think they brought back, which is a really cool one. It was like a scientist doing experiments like on cadavers, and they were like in the body bags. And lightning, it's supposed to be raining, and lightning hits like this like laboratory he's working, and out of nowhere, the bodies just kind of popped up like in these see-through body bags, and they're like zombies following the cart. That was pretty creepy.
Wow, that sounds pretty crazy.
It's really, if you've never been, it's really, really cool. It's not as crowded as the big parts, but again, if you're used to Universal or not, it might not be your thing. I love it just because it's very unique, and it's more of a personal experience, I think.
So is there anything else about the hayride that kind of stuck out?
The one thing that stuck out for me, and I hope they bring him back in the next few years or so, the hayride actually stopped at a certain point, and there was a cornstalk maze, which we don't see here in Southern California, as far as I know. You have to walk through.
Okay.
One entrance was like a... it reminded me of like a Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like the creepy clowns, but it was like a police precinct of like clowns, and they escorted you off the hayride. You would have to go to this like dark carnival and then into like a cornstalk maze where it was just like different characters chasing you.
That's crazy.
It was creepy because I'm like, they never did that before. And I'm like, we're actually stopping. And they're like, mm-hmm. everyone stand up. And so you're going into this maze and you're hearing chainsaws and the people's, oh my God, people screaming. What creeped me out was these two little girls, and they're obviously of age to work there, and they were playing Ring Around the Rosie.
Yeah.
And they're like, come play with us. I'm like, yeah, go away. And they were chasing me. That was creepy. It was just for them to do that. And like the simplest light, like what you have here, just cascading down like on a facade or like a building, just created this ambiance and this creepy environment. And then your peripheral and you have sensory overload because you're hearing noises. There's people coming at you. And some guests are running away. They had their own rendition of like the nun, this creepy lady in makeup. And then there was like a weeping bride holding a baby. I didn't like that. That creeped me out. But just to experience like a cornstalk maze outside.
Right.
We don't see that here. Everything's always built facades or inside like a soundstage, like a Universal. But that was really, really cool. And it seemed like it went on forever. And then from there, once it ended, they put us back onto the hayride. Then we continued the hayride for another 15, 20 minutes. So it was very immersive, and it was more of a theatrical performance, which I dig. You know, not every jump scare is interesting. They get very repetitive.
Yeah.
But it's something that it sticks out, or it's immersive, or it's like this huge production. You know, like, again, it's not the same quality as Universal or Knott's, but it has its own, you know, unique mystique. That's what I like about it. Just like Sinister Point.
Yeah.
They're an independent, but they could perform at a, you know, professional level.
Okay.
And they took a personal perspective and created this, you know, these nightmares for people. And I loved it. Even like I was creeped out walking through our own maze. I hated walking through the maze. Some of the actors I worked with, they claimed to, I don't know if this is true or not, they claimed to like hear and see things in certain parts of the maze. And I kept it to myself. And some of the, you know, I bonded with a lot of the folk that worked there. They come up to me, they're like, hey, did you notice? And they tell me the same story, like a supposed shadowy figure in a certain room in the maze. And I know if it was just, you know, a figment of my imagination. So every time I walked by that room, I'd look in there because I'd go in there and before we open, drop off my water and cough drops and whatever. And so every time I walked past that room, I was like, and it might've just been, you know, us imagining things because we're in a spooky environment, but some people are like, no, this mall's haunted. I'm like, come on.
Yeah. I mean,
who knows? It might've been something attached to the maze or a disgruntled shopper that passed away. Who knows? But it's just weird to hear multiple stories from the same people that saying that they saw something inside the maze. But again, maybe it's just a figment of our imaginations because it's like you watch a horror movie and all of a sudden you're going to the bathroom, you're looking over your shoulder every 5 minutes or.
Well, I remember, you probably remember this too, man. I was probably 10th grade, So Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah.
Dude.
They had to edit that. That is.
I get chills right now talking about
the ride. Effing creepy.
So I remember we were staying at my buddy's house, a bunch of us one night, and we rented it. Mm-hmm. And we're like, that sure as hell looks like a little boy behind that curtain. Well, we found out later it was that Ted Danson cardboard cutout.
Right.
Know? But back then we didn't know that. You know what
because
I mean?
Because it's on VHS. There's no internet.
Yeah.
I was expecting like some like phantom like, woo, but it's like, I remember the scene. The mom shows up.
Mm-hmm.
She looks at the baby and she's about to exit the apartment.
They're walking together out.
And the curtains are slightly opened. And then there's just like this kid standing there, and we were probably like inches from the screen. We're like, ah!
Yeah, because there's no HD back then, right? It was just like kind of a little fuzzy.
There's no Google. There's no nothing. It's like, you know, there was dial up, like I think it was like only the government had the internet. And the public didn't have it. There was no AOL or nothing.
Right.
We just aged ourselves. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was creepy. Also, like some of the stories from like the original. Again, that's not horror related, but from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Did you take a look at that stuff?
Yeah, like the supposed midget that will try to hang, you know.
What'd you see back there?
I don't know if it was like a stork taking flight, mm-hmm, or if it was like the disgruntled little drunken midget that tried to, I don't know what those things are called, the counterweights when they yeah, lift the sets and props, try to hang himself, and supposedly the rope was too long.
See, that's what I got out of when I watched it. I'm like, it looks like a stork, but then it looks like some mechanism with rope. I don't know. I mean, it's been a while since I saw it, but I remember
watching. I don't know if you noticed it. I don't know if it's the Tin Man or the Cowardly Lion, whatever character was on the very end, while they're doing their song and dance. I think it's the Scarecrow. Before the road bends and they go right, that actor who played whatever character was, it seems like, it might just be me, it seems like they look over to where that actually happened.
Oh, and that's during that same shot?
During that same shot. So if you see it again, it looks like the actor looks over like, hey, what's going on over there? But there's stories that it was a stork, like part of the movie. The actor tried to hang himself. And
yeah, that's a trip, dude. Speaking of movie stuff, like Poltergeist, of course, the deaths affiliated with that movie. Mm-hmm. You know, the little girl died, what, on the surgery table, right?
She died during the filming of the third movie, I believe.
Yeah, during that time, yeah, because she had the big cheeks, and at that point they said they were giving her the wrong meds, and it inflamed, mm-hmm, her cheeks out, you know. And then, of course, the sister died. Her boyfriend strangled her.
Mm-hmm.
And there had been some accidents along the way on those sets. I mean, it just depends what you believe in, you know.
What's interesting about the Poltergeist, the pool scene, when the mom falls into the pool that's being, mm-hmm, renovated or built out, they actually used real skeletons.
Wow. I heard that. Okay.
There was an actual pungent smell coming off the skeletons. It wasn't like they got them from like a medical lab that were, they were sanitized. And, but mm-hmm, no, they were actually like, I don't know where they got them, in like a morgue or something, but there were actual skeletons they threw in the water. And so I don't think they informed anyone until after. That movie scared the shit out of me. The clown.
Yeah, the clown, yeah, and everything, man.
That was an actual maze at Universal last year. And the facade of the house.
That's right. It was a good one.
Didn't it look like the real house?
Yes, it did.
And yep. I saw my little chubby 8-year-old version of me looking at the house. And I'm like, that's the Poltergeist.
Yeah, and I've been to that house a couple times. Once last year. Uh-huh. It's 4267 Roxbury. Right. Like Simi Valley, dude. And it's just a little neighborhood, man.
it looks like a normal house, right?
Right. They didn't shoot interiors there. No. But yeah, just the house. But it's a trip, dude.
It took me back because my dad pretty much let me watch anything. He bought videos. He recorded back in the day. There was only two cable companies. It was On TV, On and Select TV. And horror movies back then were either like, everything was rated R. There was no NC-17. There was no PG-13. Yeah. It was just like, everything's rated R. And they showed anything after 10 o'clock at night. It just was a free-for-all to watch. So I'm watching these Italian horror movies. I'm watching Porky's, which is the horror related, but I shouldn't be watching that at 8 years old. But that's where it started. Just the influence of movies when you're younger and watching them in the dark. Elvira, you have a picture of Elvira. The Mystery Macabre or Movie Macabre?
Movie Macabre.
It was Saturdays in Channel 9, I think.
Okay. She's all laid out on the
right, bed. And it was at my grandparents' house in the city of Montebello, but they had this huge, you know, the big old school big screens,
mm-hmm,
and they had this little black and white in my great aunt's room, and she's like, "Hey, your show's about to start," so I'd rather go watch it in the black and white in the dark and be 2 inches from the screen, and that's where it started. Even though it was, you know, edited for TV, but seeing like the iconic like Universal monster movies and like Vincent Price, his voice, and just I discovered a lot of his old radio broadcasts, just like on iTunes or Spotify. And going back and watching like the House of Wax or The Pit and the Pendulum, or he even came out, which I saw a couple weeks ago, Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just that early exposure as a kid developed, you know, an interest in collections and movies and haunts and just going to film locations like you have.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of, you know, back then, I see you brought some old vinyl, man.
Yeah.
From some of these movies, man. What do you got?
So I know you're an Aliens fan. So this is actually an original print of the first Aliens movie. I found this in a record shop for like $15.
Damn.
And this is the original score. Let's take it out of that. Original score from the movie. I hope you guys can see that.
Yeah. Definitely.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of my
prize,
one of my gems. Again, we're about to age ourselves. Battlestar Galactica, and it's in plastic. Hopefully you can see it.
Yeah.
Not the remake with Edward James Olmos on Sci-Fi, but the original series that was filmed at Universal Studios, and it was composed and performed by the Los Angeles Philharmonica. I actually got this at Monsterpalooza, the Summit of Monsterpalooza.
Nice.
And this reminds me of Universal Studios going. They had the stunt show. They had a stunt show there, and that was pretty cool. Yeah, that's an original. This is my prized possession, which I found on Amazon for way too much money. 1963, Tales of the Frightened. I don't know if you guys can see that. I don't know if you want to grab it.
Yeah.
Tales from the Frightened. It's a narrative of like spooky stories from Boris Karloff, and that was an original print from 1963. I listen to it every year during Halloween or September, either on, you can see it on YouTube. Just Google Tales of the Frightened Boris Karloff, and it's pretty cool. If you're into those iconic characters, you know, he obviously played, Boris Karloff played Frankenstein? He did, in Universal.
Okay.
And Lon Chaney was the Wolfman, and
that's right.
Bela Lugosi was obviously Dracula.
Dracula, correct.
But just this thing reminds me of my childhood, and I grew up going to Universal Studios, not necessarily Disneyland. Nothing against Disneyland, but we'd go there, and it's cool how you could go there and see the Psycho House, you know, the original Psycho House, or like the Bates Motel.
Yeah, you can walk.
Yeah, long,
especially on the Halloween Horror Nights, you can actually
walk through there.
And one day, I think there's a tour. I'd like to walk into, like, you know, the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously they're gutted out or whatever, but I'd love to.
I think there's a private backlot tour. They actually take you on the sound stages.
That's what I'm talking about right there, man. That'd be great.
Some of them were lost in the fire they had, like, I think 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you could actually go into the sound stage where they filmed Frankenstein.
And that's what you were saying you loved about Universal, is that it still has all those facades of these older movies, right?
You could go there and see the street scene from like The Hunchback or Notre Dame, you know, I'm going to pronounce it right.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the original Wolfman, or, you know, the Bride of Frankenstein, or The Invisible Man. And it's cool. You go there and you're like, wow, these were filmed like in the 20s and 30s. And they're revamping the original, you know, excuse me, the original monsters. They brought the maze yesterday, and it was Universal Monsters in a, again, it's not spooky, scary, or they're not choking you and waterboarding you like at these immersive haunts. To me, it's more like the production and the development of the soundstage, or not the soundstage, of like the props. Like, you walked into this, like, I'm assuming it was like Frankenstein's castle or Dracula's castle, and just seeing the details of like the brick and the mortar.
Sure.
Then you hear like the pipe organs playing. I'm like, well, where's that coming from? You turn the corner and it's the Phantom of the Opera. Or like the vampires were at the, you know, having their dining room table. Or you saw the Wolfman transform.
Right.
To me, that was very iconic. And that was like reminding me of my childhood or the experiences of my grandfather and my dad. So,
okay.
Not the spookiest thing, but it just took you back.
Yeah. It's nostalgic. It's historical.
That's what started it all. That's what started the horror genre. You know, those movies. And then, you know, what started the slasher genre. To me, it was John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was all these 80s, the Night Stalker, Sleepaway Camp. I'm not pronouncing that right. And then you jump into the 90s with Scream and horrible movies like Candyman. That's my second reference to that, how bad it was. And then Friday the 13th. To me, it was a little too gory. I'm not a big gore fan, but it all started originally with Universal Monsters.
Okay. I see you brought one of your masks there.
I'm not only a horror fan, or the original Crimson Ghost movie. I'm also a Misfits fan, the punk band. I love this mask. I got it from Trick or Treat Studios. It's very iconic to me, just because it's that classic skull of the movie, the Crimson Ghost, and also being a punk rock fan myself. I don't know if we can see this down here. That's a collectible figure from Universal Studios, licensed product. which they stopped making before, you know, Funko and all this became popular and cool. Geeks would have to, you know, hide their nerdiness, you know, in their closets and all that.
Yeah.
These are some of the iconic characters. This is the Gillman, the creature from the Black Lagoon. They stopped making these in the 90s. The harder ones to find are like the officially licensed Bela Lugosi, Dracula, Lon Chaney, Wolfman. Unfortunately, I had Lon Chaney Sr., the Phantom of the Opera, mm-hmm. and it was in mint condition, but stupid me, I gave it to someone I was, I guess, dating at the time.
Right.
If you're watching this, going to have that back, please, one day. That'd be nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I love that how you have all the different Halloween masks from all the different movies. You have all the xenophobe and just the different characters from Aliens. Even the Reebok shoes. I mean, you have a lot going on. It's just...
I need another case, man. But, yeah, some of this stuff I've had in boxes, man, when I was in my 20s, man. Mm-hmm. You probably can't see it from here, but, like, all that Alien set up there with the Queen,
mm-hmm.
that was in a box. That Michael there with Loomis broke. Now, those were in boxes from, you know, when I was living with, you know, my parents or whatever, way back in the day, and I never had.
Mm-hmm.
case or anything like that to put it in. So I finally broke those out last year. And yeah, I definitely want to get another case because I'm going to keep collecting masks.
Mm-hmm.
The Pops need to have their own case. Pops are cool, but
they take up a lot of space. That's what's cool about it.
Yeah.
So, oh, I do have one more mask I forgot about.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I got one more mask. So this was a small batch from the Devil's Workshop. And this was, he had the mold already made it. And what he did was he only made, I think, 19 or 20 of them. Really, really cool. And he did different color schemes. Again, Devil's Workshop, follow him on Instagram. I'm sorry, I forget the artist's name. And he did different color schemes for the hair, the teeth, the eyes. And there was two I wanted. And this was the one color scheme he got. And it came in a mystery bag. And I believe it was 19. I got number 8 out of 19. And when it showed up, and I was like, yes. And it's like, again, another nerdy hobby. Guys in their 40s had to hide for years. Now it's the cool thing to do. So
now we're cool.
Now we're
cool. Yeah. So, yeah. Hey, if you wouldn't mind, can you open that door and grab your figure there? And I'll show it.
Figure.
Yeah. And I'll throw it right here so they can check it out, man.
Yeah, for sure. So these were in mass production probably in the 90s. And it's officially licensed product. I don't know if you guys can see that.
I'll throw it up right here.
Officially licensed product from Universal Studios, and that's the Gillman from obviously Creature of the Black Lagoon. The first series, it's Frankenstein's Monster, the Lon Chaney Wolfman, the Mummy, which I have, but I forgot to bring, the Bride of Frankenstein, and I believe Frankenstein. And the second series, there's the Bela Lugosi, Dracula, and there was like the Mask of the Red Death, Red Plague, Red Death, which is Edgar Allan Poe. Actually short story, but again, these weren't popular in the 90s or in the 80s or something like nerds would collect. So now it's like nerds, you go to Monster, you find them at Monster Palooza. I actually found this at Center Monster Palooza and Amazon as well. Yeah, it takes me back to your childhood.
You know, before I forget, you were telling me a story about Freddy versus Jason, which we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. So originally they wanted Kane Hodder.
He was under the impression he was going to play Jason, okay. Obviously.
Right.
Once the script came out and production started taking off, they decided to go with another stuntman who played Jason on, I forget which movie. And
Ken Kersinger was the cat in Freddy vs. Jason, but yeah.
So he was, there's the To Hell and Back, the documentary about Hodder.
I'll have to check that out.
He actually talks about that. He was ready to play the part as Jason. And they decided to go with someone else, and he was totally heartbroken. I don't blame him. He's more recognized as Jason Voorhees, and for some when they finally did a Jason versus Freddy movie, which this screenplay just was kicked around Hollywood for years in the 90s, and it finally
nobody wanted it.
They did, but this I don't think anybody just took initiative to get it done.
Okay,
and it was just like Alien versus Predators. Everyone knew of it, but it never took flight until a certain year, but. You could tell he was totally heartbroken about it, but he had an amazing career. So
you were saying, cause I've seen him a few times, at Monster Palooza, and very nice dude. Took a picture. I dress as Travis Bickle, usually there. And he took a picture of me and him together for his phone, man. So I was like, wow, that's cool.
Well, you look
cool
like
stuff, man.
You look like him from the movie. So it's easy for you to call.
Well, thanks, man. But Well, I noticed he wore those gloves, and I didn't know till you told me today, like, what happened?
I didn't know either till I saw his documentary. He suffered major burns as a young man doing a stunt for a reporter. And so, like, 80 or 90% of his body was burned, and he went through tons of treatment. And what was sad, they had him, they were treating his burns at a normal hospital until they finally realized, we can't treat you here. We have to send you to a burn victim facility in San Francisco. So for months, he was being mistreated. Not, they weren't mm-hmm. abusing him, but they weren't catering to his wounds, you know, in the proper manner. So I think his hands are somewhat disfigured. So he wears the full gloves. I thought it was just, I mean, it's just like a cool look. No, he wears it, he's shaking people's hands, but mm-hmm. he might have some disfigurement on his hands. Super nice guy. Super nice guy.
Yeah, Kane, if you somehow ever stumble upon this, open invite, man. I'm over here in Marietta area. So I'm the guy that dressed as Travis Bickle at Monsterpalooza. We took a picture together. So anyway.
He played also the movie Hatchet.
Yeah.
He played in 1 and 2, which I didn't know until I saw the documentary. And he did tons of other stuff. He's comical, too. He's got a comedic presence. I mean,
well, he did. He also came back and did Jason X, which was awful. Not because of Kane, but it's a guilty pleasure. I've watched it a lot. Have you seen that one, Jason X?
When he goes to space. The one I love is I forget which one it is.
It's a good awful, by the way.
It's he's fighting this kid, and the kids, throwing all these punches and hit, making contact. And Jason finally grabs him. He's like, do your best, knock my block off. And he physically hits him and knocks his head off his shoulders. And they're like fighting on a rooftop. I don't, was that Jason Takes Manhattan?
Yeah, I don't think it was Jason X, so it might've been Manhattan one. There are some heads that fly in Jason X, but it's not, I don't think it's that one.
He's like, do your best, knock my block off. And Jason nearly knocks his head off his shoulders. I think it's the same one. There's like some punk kids like in Manhattan and he kicks their stereo.
That might be that one, yeah.
And he turns around and he lifts his mask and they freak out and take off running, yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the reboot in... In 09?
See, this is where I'm conflicted.
Okay.
I feel some movies shouldn't be touched.
Okay.
And then some remakes, like when they redid Evil Dead, I thought it was like, wow, this was super.
Loved it.
It was really good.
Yes. Yep.
But then you go look at the remake. I love Rob Zombie, but his remake of Halloween, I didn't care for. I think I didn't care for the reboot of. I didn't care for the reboot for Nightmare on Elm Street. I didn't care for the reboot of Friday the 13th. Some movies just should be left alone.
Yeah, and then when you screw them up, it makes you appreciate the original even more. So, but Evil Dead was good, man. I loved it.
I was really impressed, and it seemed like it could have been a separate movie and not even associated with Evil Dead, but it was in a. Like the very end when it's raining blood
mm-hmm.
and she kills the demon with a chainsaw. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And I'm not a big gore fan, but I'm like, wow,
that's the kind of gore I can take when it's got, a story, good story along with it and good sound design mm-hmm. and good shots. I can go with that. But if it's just gore and blood splat mm-hmm. everywhere, meh, but Evil Dead is a good example of
that. Was really good.
Everything packaged together. Right.
Even like, and I mentioned this before, with Scaredy Cat, I like the original Fright Night that was made in the 80s. Yeah. How creepy.
Oh, yeah.
The remake for some reason, I like, what's his name?
Colin Farrell, right?
Yeah, I like him for some reason. Maybe I have like a man crush on him or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he played it very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. I don't know why. Even like the Purge movies I dug. What other recent horror movies that came out? I'm trying to think.
Don't Breathe. Same guy that did Evil Dead.
It was, maybe I was, the person I was with at the time didn't enjoy it. Some of the remakes of like, Dawn of the Dead or like Night of the Living Dead, they were entertaining. There's just some movies like I totally dig, like classic movies like, what was it? The original, Last House on the Left, but also like the remake of The Hills Have Eyes. I thought that was better than the original, which was Wes Craven's first movie.
Was it? I don't know.
I think he made that first before Nightmare.
Okay, I did see the new one, the first one.
How good was it?
I loved it.
I loved it. He followed the same story. They were a little more hillbilly-ish in the first one. Mm-hmm. I thought they made a 1 and 2, didn't they?
Yeah, 2 I put in for like seriously about 2 or 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and I pulled it out. I'm like, I probably should have gave it another shot, but
mm-hmm.
The Hills Have Eyes, the reboot had Buffalo Bill in it.
He was the dad. Yeah, that's right. I told
Ted Levine, right?
I loved it. I thought it was better than the original one. Even like the new Nightmare, where they Freddy comes off the screen and he's an actual character, oh, yeah. but he's totally yoked and he's like evil and demonic and he's pretty buff. The Nika doll, well, I shouldn't say doll, action figure.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. He comes with like the demonic face and the different hands.
Okay. So tell me about these escape rooms.
So I've been to two, and I'm probably going to butcher the name of the one I've been to recently. Escapade Games. I'm probably butchering that. This one was a horror themed survival escape room.
Okay.
So you have to work in a team. Some of them are just one large room, some are multiple rooms. The cool about this one, and they're based in Fullerton, it's a horror survival theme escape room. You have an hour to do it. Sometimes they give you a little more. But not only you have to work as a team and figure out clues, there's scare actors. And I don't want to give too much away because it's they actually blindfold you before you enter. And you sign a waiver because, you fall, you get hurt, whatnot. And the story is Zoe is this little girl who's trapped in this house. And you have to help Zoe escape. But then her demon-possessed uncle is the scare actor who's following you from room to room. As soon as I walked in, it smelled like a haunt. It looked like a haunt. It was like a mini haunt maze that was that had a baby with like an escape room. And they tell you, hey, there's LED candles. You could grab them. You could use them.
Yeah.
There's not that many. You walked in, and as soon as they took the blindfolds off, we were in this like den. And all it was one single candle on this mantle. We all ran for it. And what's funny, because I went with people I worked with at Sinister Point, and we're all fraidy cats. We're all hovering in the corner. We were scared. And we had to do something in order to get the lights on. And it's, you got this environmental, like a soundtrack playing while you're trying to do these clues. You're trying to figure to move on to the next room. And I remember we had one little LED candle and this character came out. And we all cowered in the corner and he took the candle out of our hands. We're in the complete dark.
Damn.
And besides, like they lit up a fireplace, which was like fake fire. And you'd have to go from room to room to room. One of the scenarios I remember, we finally saw multiple clues. So we're moving on to the next room. And I love this one because it wasn't just like a decor on the wall and like, oh, you need to get out. I was like, no, there's someone chasing you. And, and whenever it got suspenseful, like there was like these cues on the music and it just made it more terrifying.
Yeah.
I got a key to get out of the room and it was just like a horror movie. I couldn't put the key in the lock.
Oh, okay.
And then here comes the scare actor towards us and we're like, ah, like I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so you go from room to room to room. And, the goal is, to finally get to the end. It felt like a horror movie. It was very, and it wasn't one of these like immersive, like haunts where they tie you up and waterboard you, whatever they do, which is not my thing. Nothing against that industry. Part of the industry, excuse me. But it was fun. It was very fun. It was interactive. And at the end of the day, we met, the owner, operator, the actor. And it was really, really cool.
Okay.
There's another one here in not too far from here. It's Murder Co., which is a black market escape room. It's in Upland, I believe. That one is the only R-rated themed horror room. So what it is, the theme is, I believe it's like this private club of millionaires who come to witness people get murdered. So you're inside this like compound or like this facility where they're executing people for money for a game and you're trying to escape. So the actors are the victims and they have scare actors. Well, they call them actors. They have different Halloween masks. Like each character has his own theme. Like there's like a clown and there's like a one is like it has a military background. So that's a horror theme, rated R horror theme escape room. And it's pretty cool. And if you follow them on Instagram or Facebook, excuse me, they actually upload the security footage of people being chased throughout the haunt, well, throughout the escape room. And it's multiple little rooms. And for the people that, they want to get that haunt fix, they can't wait till September or October. There's a lot of these immersive like escape rooms or like there's like the Willows. There's this other one I forget. The Escape Hotel in Hollywood. That's actually inside an old hotel. So when you walk into the lobby of this hotel, they have like the game masters or the guests who are in character. It's like a French maid has got the proper makeup to make her look like she's a ghoul or undead. And there's multiple little escape rooms in there. They're horror themed.
Yeah.
One's supposed to be like the mobster room for the 40s. They have a new one that's like a zombie apocalypse. And again, you're trying to, as a team, figure out these clues, but there's this interaction with actors like, distracting you. So it makes it fun. You're on edge all the time. And it's nothing too crazy. Like they're going to kidnap you and tie to a chair. It's just, it's like theater of the mind.
Right.
And I had, like I said, I had a hard time unlocking this door because everyone's screaming and grabbing on me. And
does he time his walk to you though? Like
he, again, I we all know it's fake, but we forgot it. Right. I thought it was real and he took his time, and like, I'm trying to shut the door, and he's doing the Michael through the, you know, through the door, trying to grab me. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I shut the door, and then you have to figure out the next clue to the new room. So he's literally stalking you through the different rooms.
Okay.
And that was fun. So it's like, you got your horror fix, you know, like in spring. So.
Yeah. I'd imagine you know, they know their limits, right? Well, as a scare actor, you know your limits, but if you don't have a safe word,
yeah,
like that guy, Russ, it's kind of dangerous because you might run into somebody that may have to defend themselves or something, you know? And what would you do?
Me personally, I don't like, again, nothing against that part of the industry. I don't like there's the 17th door, which is fine. There's an escape room, and that's more of a haunt than an actual like immersive like theater. They're going to take you and put you like in a body bag. There's an escape room, and I think the 17th door in Fullerton, I think they give you a glow stick. It lets the actors know, hey, I don't want to be touched. I don't want to do anything.
Okay.
But you're signing a waiver. But the ones like, you know, where there's no safety word or there's no way to get out. It's like, again, you're signing up for that. So you know what it is. But if someone reaches their limit, it's like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, no, you can't leave. It's like, no, I am going to leave. I'm going to put you in a bicep choke and get the hell out of here. You
know? Yeah, exactly. You know? Right.
Some people like that. To me, it has nothing to do really with like the haunt industry. It's like, to me, I picture like ghosts and demons and mm-hmm. jack-o'-lanterns, maybe like a serial killer or like something that's like Out of the Hills Have Eyes. Another cool haunt, Reign of Terror in Thousand Oaks. They're the biggest biggest indoor haunt. They have 100 individual rooms, which wow. is pretty cool. They did a charity event recently, I think 2 months ago, to raise money for some animal shelters. A lot of animals that the recent fires we had, they needed funding from some shelters to cater to all these animals. It went from like we spent more time in the actual mazes than actually in the queue in line. And the queue was like a mining town. It reminded me of like the log ride, like in Knott's. And it was like these old little kerosene yeah. lanterns burning and the simplest little LED pin light, like cascading like on a shed. And it went from like a mining town to like a zombie apocalypse to like a nuclear fallout to like these Victorian homes with like these, it reminded me like Interview with Vampire, like vampires. Yeah. And it went to like a dark carnival, which I didn't like. But it was never ending. And after a while, I'm like, when's it going to end? And
yeah.
that was pretty cool. It was a drive, but again, they do something year round. They do the regular haunt season, but they did a one-off for a fundraiser. That was fun. But the immersive ones where they're like, you're being held against your will or, hey, if it floats your boat, yeah, it's just not my thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. How do you not have a safety word? It's like.
Yeah. And like you said, even though you're signing up still, man, still there's gonna be a point you're going to reach with some people that may not know what they're signing up for. You know,
well, once you get hurt or you have a condition or, yeah. okay, they revive you, but then should you go on? You know, who's yeah. liable for what if something happens? It's, you know, you want to have fun. If that's fun for you, hey, cool, but that's just not my thing.
Yeah. What do you got planned for this haunt season?
Hopefully I'm working again. I'm definitely psyched for the haunt season. There's, you know, you got Knott's, you have Dark Harbor, Queen Mary, there's the Hayride out in Griffith Park. You have the studios, Sinister Point. As far as I know, they got something going on. I don't know the details.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it gets released right around Midsummer Scream in the convention of Long Beach. That's going to happen August 3rd and 4th. And it's just like this picture Comic-Con, but for the haunt and horror community. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's ridiculous. It's just, I get there at 9 in the morning to get in between 10:30 and 11.
Yeah.
The first couple of years I went, I had way too much coffee and I was just like, oh my God. And it's, you see, as soon as you walk in, there's all these vendors, there's masks, there's actors, there's like shirts, there's pins, there's soaps, there's all these cool vendors. Then they have the Hall of Shadows where they have like the little mini mazes, and there's the sliders,
mm-hmm.
and it's interactive. You have people that cosplay. It's just definitely sensory overload. I want to definitely work this year.
Would they call you back? Are these things that you got to re-audition? Or
I don't know, because this is only gonna be my second year working. Okay. Unless they're like, you have your position locked in. They're like, hey, don't worry about it. If you go somewhere new, you definitely got to audition. Like, for example, let's say I wanted to go work at Not Scary Farm. You have to audition. And the way I heard it, it's like, what do you want to do? Well, I want to do this. Well, why? Okay, well, play this, do this in this character. And this is what I've been told in YouTube videos yeah. I watched. Yeah, I definitely want to work. I'd love to go back to Sinister Point. Hopefully, I haven't really been told what they're going to do. I heard there's something in the works.
Okay.
And that'd be cool if they brought back my character, the creepy security guard, if not, I'll play whatever they want me to play. It just... It's just fun. It's a creative outlet. And it's even though we're only in May, it people have been going crazy since April, the Spook Show. And then next thing you know, it's Monsterpalooza just passed. And now it's Midsummer Scream and then Son of Monsterpalooza.
Yeah, I mean, Halloween season for me, it's I get excited, obviously, that it's coming. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's kind of sad because the closer you get to it, the closer it's over.
Right.
You know what I mean? November 1st. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, you know.
But what they're doing now, too, a lot of the haunts are doing like Christmas theme haunts. So like they'll start doing in November. Like Sinister Point did a Not So Merry Christmas. There was a couple of independents I went to in LA. So like Zombie Joe's, that's more immersive theater.
Okay.
That was really cool. It got a little personal in my man space. And I was like, okay, no, this is, but what made it really cool about that, it was only two of us and it was a dark ride and it went from like a dark sinister carnival ride to like, you're immersed in hell.
Okay.
And it got very close and personal and surrounded by multiple people. But at the same time, I'm like, I know this is not real, but it got very creepy. But they do stuff year round as well. Zombie Joe's underground theater.
Keeps everything alive through the year then.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So there's things to do. There's the Willows. There's a bunch of them I'm forgetting. You got escape rooms and you have like these immersive performance theaters. There's the ones that Scaredy Cat likes. Sorry, nothing against Justin, but I don't like those dudes. Sorry. Yeah. I'm going to text him later on. But again, like I get bummed out, like, yeah, it's October. But then like you start getting bummed out because like, well, now it ended and what do you do? And you got to start taking out the decorations and putting everything away. Unless you got something like this, you keep around year round and just to remind you. But that community, they're going nuts. They can't wait for like Midsummer Scream. I'm telling you, it's the Comic-Con of the Halloween horror community.
Wow.
And it's just getting bigger and bigger. My suggestion, if you guys are going to go, get there early, eat light, browse before you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do the mini haunts, do them first because the later it gets on, the longer they get.
Mm. Yeah, I heard about that Midsummer. I haven't went, but I've seen like pictures and it looks crazy. I talked to some people that have went.
Mm-hmm.
They said it was just hard finding parking.
Yeah,
like
that was an issue.
Blocks over, you know.
One year
I mean?
I got there like, oh, it opens 11. So I got there 11 and I drove around for about an hour. But the last 3 years I've gotten there 9:30, found parking, got in line, and they realized the lines were getting longer and longer. So they let people in about 10:15-ish, 10:30. So
yeah,
it's cool. I mean, you'll see actors there. I forget his name. He plays Captain Spaulding.
Sid Haig.
He looked at me and he was smiling. He was smiling and he was like grinning. I'm like, you're a creepy mother effer. I was like, and he heard me say that. And he was like, eh. I was like,
yeah.
He was there. A bunch of other people. Knots is their Universal, the Independents, all the vendors, like in the shirts, like Fright Rags. What's the other shirt company?
Terror Threads.
Yeah, they're there.
Fright Rags and Terror Threads, they have some really good stuff. I have a lot of stuff from both of them. I like the baseball tees.
They make some cool. I got a couple of them. What kills me is there's tons of masks.
Mm.
And
browse before you buy, like you said, right?
One year I walked out with like four bags and I was like $500 in the hole. I'm like, what the hell did I buy? And it's like masks pins and shirts and...
That's the thing, man, because I walk into Monsterpalooza and like the first table, I'm like, oh, I want to buy that, but I don't want to carry it around all day, and then I might see something cooler. So yeah, you got to have the patience, I think.
Yeah, so browse, then buy, because like you go to the first couple of booths and you realize there's like 15 rows. And
so, yeah, good stuff, man. Well, hey, I think we'll close it out.
Cool.
That was a hell of a run.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much we bullshitted about
us. We never met, by the way, until today.
This is just through mutual friends. We totally just,
So appreciate it, man. We'll do
no worries,
it again.
Dude, no worries.
And we got another connection, another horror connection.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, sir.